It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Still Barbell. King James Beckett in the beat rub.
Still Barbell.
The Jay-Z White in the catalog.
Still Barbell.
Kids are legends to go.
That theme song will never stop being just filling me with joy. We are still plottable. I'm Jay King from The Athletic. He is Brian B. Robb from Mass Live. And today we have a beautiful podcast for you guys, something we've been super excited to release, an interview with our Moby Dick, Evan Turner, the greatest interviewer, NBA interviewer, maybe of all time. Just a hilarious guy, an insightful guy, a thoughtful guy. And we had a lot of fun with Evan Turner, didn't we, B. Robb?
Really did. I mean, expectations were pretty high, Jay, going into it, and he somehow surpassed them all. Like, this was a dynamite 45 minutes where I feel like we covered everything from his career, his time with the Celtics, his view of the current Celtics, and just a ton of amazing stories along the way.
He is very high on the current Celtics. Let's just put it that way. He went back through his time with the Celtics and how they kind of reinstilled his joy of basketball, how he and what he called, I think, a group of replacements kind of restored the Celtics to a winning team and started to turn them around. So his insight was just phenomenal. We won't talk about it too much here, but for anybody who's listening to the free show, just want to let you know, we are a Monday through Friday podcast. To join us, become a member at patreon.com/stillpottable. And you can either get a plan that lets you get 3 episodes per week or 5 episodes per week, plus bonus episodes sometimes when the Celtics have a good game on the weekends. We are the best daily Celtics podcast, and hopefully some of you will want to sign up for that. But if you don't, then you'll be able to enjoy a snippet of this Evan Turner interview, the first third of it. For the rest of it, you're going to have to subscribe. And honestly, Evan Turner alone would be worth the price of subscription. The guy is the greatest quote in NBA history.
And the big thing here, Jay, is if you go and you subscribe right now at patreon.com/stillpottable, you can check us out. Give us for 7 days. You can
free
sign
trial.
Up. Free trial. You can listen to this podcast in full. You can listen to our past podcasts, whether it's game analysis, other big-time guests. It's all there for you to check out. And if you like it, we'd love to have you along for the ride. But definitely, this is if you've been thinking about joining it, especially with this point of the season, Jay, this is a great time to hop aboard, because business is only going to be picking up from here. And this interview in itself, I think, is certainly worth it.
Now we'll get to the interview. All right. It's Still Pottable. Back again. I'm Jay King from The Athletic, here with Brian Robb from Mass Live. And today we got our Moby Dick. We got the guest we've always wanted to have on the show, Evan Turner, the greatest interview of all time. One of my favorite Boston Celtics ever, maybe my favorite Boston Celtic ever. Appreciate you for coming on, Evan, man. Thank you.
Nah, appreciate y'all having me, man. Appreciate y'all having me. Thank you. That's a hell of an intro, because I don't get the favorite Boston Celtic ever tag to me too often, especially considering who played there. So it's cool to, I always joke.
You were part of the rise, though.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You turned it around.
Yeah, from the trenches, man, from the trenches. And I didn't even take it personal when I helped rise up and then they shipped me off. You know what I mean?
But they shipped you off. You ran away for 70-something million dollars, didn't you?
Yeah, no lie. But, you know, you talk about those times back in the day, especially with the Celtics. It was super those were some of my favorite moments in the league because you literally felt like you were kind of like, you just stripped naked of everything. But, you know, we didn't have like a national TV game. You know what I mean? We had a team full of replacements and no real expectations to win. So it's kind of cool to really see what you could do with a group of leftovers. I always thought that was pretty dope because to see how those guys went on to enjoy great careers and, you know, long careers to certain people, that was like, you know, kind of like a crossroad to see if you're still going to make it or not. You know, and I'm glad we were able to make it out of that part.
So that first year, that was Marcus Smart's rookie year, right?
Yep.
And so you guys were pretty bad at the start of the year, had no expectations. And Rondo was on that team, and it was just kind of like nobody knew the vision for that team. Everyone kind of knew Rondo might be out. And then they traded him. It was an early trade. It was in December, right?
Yeah.
And Crowder came on. I can remember Crowder, he was mad as hell because he was like, rebuilding. And he was yelling. He yelled at Danny Ainge, didn't he? He came in and yelled at everybody. Like, what was that process going like from, like you said, the leftovers? So all of a sudden, I remember you guys got hot right before the trade deadline. And then you brought in Isaiah and just kind of took off the second half of that year and then the next year too.
I think the process, one thing that occurs, when you don't have like much expectations, you can try out a lot of different things. And I think one thing that occurred, like as a unit, was like, shit, I guess we might as well just listen to Brad and see what he thinks. You know what I'm saying? And I think, like I said, bro, you go back to that process, and there's a lot of approaches that you had to take with, you know, humility, especially considering for me, like coming from like a number two pick and thinking, even just a year before, I was averaging, you know, close to 20 points per game. So when you were kind of sitting there, it was like that process was just like, yo, we all just got to trust each other. And literally, like, Brad would preach just do the mundane things that nobody else wants to do. And that was little things like win the second night of a back-to-back. You know what I mean? Make sure we win every game before, you know, a Christmas break, all-star break. But I think the one thing that occurred was really comprehending your new roles. And, like, I just remember that year just being like, hey, bro, you're coming off the bench. Know your role and just starting your role. And I think that was kind of just like a reset button and a new introductory for me to, like, to the NBA. And that was, like, just a different sound to see. And I thought it was pretty cool because you had a group of, like, you know, dudes trying to figure it out themselves. There was no secret that it was going to be rebuilding. I mean, Danny Ainge doesn't work like that.
Yeah,
Mike Zarin doesn't work like those dudes aren't humble enough to literally respect you and work like that. They're going to be like, no, these dudes suck. These dudes suck. And, like, they're terrible. And we can't – we're not bad this year because of us. We're bad because they suck. You know what I'm saying? And that was, like, one of those things where you just kind of like, okay, I got to – you know, I got my garden hose and I got, you know, some work gloves and it's time to, you know, buckle down. And that's really – was the only choice you had, or it was – you know, be unsuccessful and go overseas. And that was really the two options. So it was surreal and it was like humbling and it was you felt undressed, but you know, some of the best moments is that because it's familiarity of your back against the wall.
You said, I think it was that year, maybe the next year, you said that the playing for the Celtics gave you back your joy for basketball. What did you lose about that joy? What took that away from you? And then what about that situation gave that back to you, kind of let you enjoy the game?
No, I just, you know, being a top pick or whatever occurred and things just didn't play out, you know, being in a league or whatever, you know, dealing with someone like the trials and tribulations I was dealing with, it's just basketball went from being a safe haven and not being fun. You know what I mean? And, sometimes you sit there and you're trying to shed the bus label or dodge the bus label. Like, when you leave that house, you're recognized for basketball. And in response to basketball, it's like, it's negative, it's negative, it's negative. And, you know, as a human, every now and then, you just want to be like, man, fuck that shit. I'm tired of, like, appeasing to a bunch of people, or, you know, me whining, being like, well, shit's not going away to help me be successful either. And I think at one point I was just at a draw with the game of basketball for the sake of just my mental and just my emotion. It's like, I like the game, but like, it's like with a girl that broke your heart. You're like, man, I like her, but I'm never going to literally jump out the window again.
Yeah.
To, you know what I mean, do that. And that's how I kind of felt my first day coming back to the Celtics. I remember just driving and just hoping it went well. And just being like, hey, this will be the start of year five. I told my people I'll try again and I hope it works out. And that was just me just going in white knuckling and not expecting anything. And from there, I was able to find joy and happiness because, you know, even though it's 10 years ago, the pressure can, you know, succumb to a lot. And, you know, articles come out, and when you're not, you know, when it takes time to get used to understanding that, you blend in the things you love with the bullshit that surrounds it. And I'm still learning on how to separate it.
And that was, I mean, for Celtics fans, that was like such a fun time because you guys, it was the first year Brad was there, they went, I think it was 25-57.
Yeah.
And then you came in the next year and there was just no expectations. And it was just like, everything was found money, you know, it was like, Oh, these guys are good. Oh, Marcus Smart's a good draft pick. Oh, Evan Turner came in and he's really doing his job in his role. And it was like Jay Crowder and Jonas Jerebko. Oh, those dudes can play in the front court together.
Kelly O'Linick, Avery Bradley. It was like it was a random group of dudes, but like it was dope to see like we were all cogs in the system and we need each other. And when Isaiah came, it was just like the easiest way to uplift the star and be like, hey, you do this, we do the rest of it. And what was cool is we were all comfortable. That's what was crazy. We were all comfortable. Like, when you saw Isaiah be a star, it's like, no, I felt like I was a star. Like, shit. Like, Isaiah was a man, but I felt like I was a star. I go look at Kelly Olynyk. When he's walking the streets, you can't tell me he's not the star. When I look at Jonas Jerebko, he's a man. When you look at Jay Crowder, it's like, okay, he's a man too. Like, we legit had a great environment where we all knew who we were. And that shit was dope, man. That shit was beautiful to be part of, you know, and it's rare to really be part of. And I can really say in certain instances, when I look back on that, there's a reason why you overachieve, and it's mindsets and, you know, compatibility like that. And we weren't a good team by any means. Not saying we were terrible, but, like, we just overachieved because we did things together and played for each other.
I'm going to switch gears now a little bit to something that might be a little tougher for you to talk about. Why did you duck Gordon Hayward in the pre-draft circuit?
Bro, because, man, the great white hope, man, I couldn't contain him. You see how athletic he is, bro? That you guys are sending one of your best. Let's just say that, okay? Gordon 6'8", he's got a handle, he's got bounce. Now, I'm just joking. To be honest, it's so funny with some of those stories that occur, and, like, unless you know your agent is full of shit, like how much your agent lies. You understand what I'm saying? And I just remember going through that draft process. And a lot of people don't know. It's like when the balls dropped. So I was supposed to be number one or number two pick. When the balls dropped, I knew I was either going number one or number two. So like my agent had literally talked to Philly. And I was like, Evan's not going lower than two. Unless I can get Kobe or some shit. Like we're taking him. Whatever. And that's all I knew. I literally only went into, like, the Philadelphia 76ers workout and was, like, I shot 50 shots. And they made me shoot 14 threes, which is probably why you should evaluate players way further.
That's it? That's all they had you do? Was
bro, just crazy.
50 shots?
And they had two people with me taking shots in between so I wouldn't get tired. So that occurred. So I'm sitting there. I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, I'm pretty sure I went to dinner the night before, like everything. So I just kind of knew that was a case of like the preparation. The only person I wanted to play was John Wall, and I comprehended he was number one. I think like with Gordon Hayward, he probably, their agents, probably Paul George and all those dudes are probably trying to send them in the workouts with me, which at the time, if you remove yourself back, like why would Gordon Hayward be in a workout with me? Like, you know what I mean?
And that's
not like bad or nothing. It's just like the truth. It's like what, like you might be in trouble at the time at that moment, having to decide between like me or Gordon Hayward back in March of 2010. It panned out way better for Gordon, of course, but it just I mean, I would see Gordon on a regular and harass him. Like, literally, like, before the draft, I would text him when I seen him. And legit, we never once talked basketball or anything. It's like legit, like, me giving him a wedgie every time I ran past him.
Yeah. So did he say that on a podcast or something? Because I didn't see what initially happened. I just saw you get mad at Gordon Hayward saying you ducked him.
No, he said on podcast Pete. And gotcha, you want to know something? I'm a big I was joking. A lot of this stuff, I know Gordon since we were 19 or 20.
Yeah.
That's where I first met Brad at what is it? The Olympic World University Games. So we met each other at the Olympic training facility back in like 09. So Gordon and I, we always had a decent ribbon, and you know, we played versus each other a couple times in college, and he's one of the people I respect a lot in regards to the game. He had a tough injury, but you know, Gordon's a point forward, and you could definitely see a talent, and he was a problem.
Yeah, you respected him so much you couldn't play with him in the pre-draft process.
And I was scared of him, man. he was dangerous, bro. You know what I mean? I grew up in the hood playing versus black dudes. A shark dude, white guy, that was my kryptonite.
So you coached the Celtics for a year. One of the shortest coaching stints in NBA history.
Just checking it out.
What made you want to get into coaching? And then what made you think, like, nah, fuck this?
To be honest with you, I just always thought I would just, you know, try to figure out if I liked it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, I think the unique situation is just being like, who would I do that under? And to come back to the Celtics and, you know, Danny and them allowing me to do so was cool. And, you know, Brad taking me under his wing and allowing me to do so was definitely cool. I think one thing that occurred that, you know, besides the COVID moments that kind of like threw everything off, but, you know, I currently have a daughter that's 5. So to be a coach, we always tell these funny stories about coming in, helping Pritchard, or coming in, rebounding for this person. Like when I was playing, I was just a talent. I'd show up for 3 hours a day, maybe do a little extra. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you're coaching, you're part of like the production, the breakdown, the cleanup and everything. So eventually, this is where like, the straw broke the camel's back was like my daughter came in town for like 4 days, and I probably only saw her like a span of like 16 or 17 hours type stuff. And I just remember sitting here like, all right, I made enough money. I've done a decent amount. Like if things fall through, I can take a break and literally just be transparent about that and just get myself together. Because let's come into the coaching side. You got to respect the coaches. That's the dark side, bro. And you're literally just burning the ship and going right in. And I think one thing that occurred was just like me figuring out like what level and capacity I can give to that was everything. I just felt like you know, to take a break when Brad was done, I was like, all right, I think I'll figure things out on my own for a second and just take a step back. But that was it. It wasn't anything crazy, just me figuring out if I wanted to do it and being like, not right now.
Yeah, people don't realize how much of a grind coaching is.
And the stress, man. I've seen some young dudes. Yeah, I've seen some young, good-looking dudes turn old quick, bro. You know what I mean? And it's and respect to the coaches, bro. Much respect. Like, you are – when he called the dark side, it's 1,000% the dark side. And one thing you can count on is your fault from the players, everybody. Like, you know what I mean? That's what was kind of funny. You're like, damn, this is what you used to deal with coaching me. But it's cool, though. And like I said, I was definitely blessed to always have an opportunity to come back and – working in a place like Boston, bro. I'm hated a lot of places, and Boston likes me. So that's a blessing.
Yeah, that was devastating for us because that was the year that the media wasn't allowed to talk to the coaches. We weren't allowed at practices. We weren't allowed into anything because of COVID. And it was the one Evan Turner year when he was on the fucking bench. We could have been getting amazing quotes all year long, and instead we were trapped upstairs waiting for our Zoom calls
with the superstars, right? I mean, it was a good it was a good consolation prize, don't you think?
Yeah.
We couldn't talk to half the team, though. That was the problem. Like, you could only talk to the stars. You couldn't even talk to the guys on the bench because you couldn't even get in the locker room to talk to them.
Yeah, bro, that whole time was a little different. That whole time was a lot of different. I mean, show that season was wild. Like, you know what I mean? Everybody just went to the crib early, basically. Like, you know what I mean? We damn near got swept by the Nets that year.
Right. Good thing Jalen got hurt that year, yeah.
Yeah.
So we've talking, you played for Brad, you coached under Brad. We need to hear some Brad stories at this point. You've gotten the full perspective of it. Is there something, do you have a favorite, like, angriest moment you've seen him get? Is there just a special story you've seen, whether you're either playing him as a coach? Like, what was your perspective from both of those angles?
I always highlight moments because so many people think Brad is, like, so unassuming, like, aloof or, like, some type of nerd. Like, you know what I mean? I can see from, like, outside looking in, but when you get around him, it's like, no, he's very serious and he really do be standing on business. So, like, when you sit there, I'm like, damn, Brad, really? So Brad just said in the room he was going to do this, and then he came out and did the shit, said the shit, and looked the dude dead in his eye. So sometimes I'm like, oh, snap. Like, this is the thing that people don't see.
All right. So to hear the rest of this interview with Evan Turner, which is awesome. The whole thing is awesome. He doesn't stop producing gems. He goes over his relationship with Brad Stevens, some behind-the-scenes stuff with Brad Stevens, talks about what it was like coaching Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. Might have said the Celtics are going to become the next dynasty. Might have said that. He absolutely said that, but you'll have to see why and listen to the whole podcast. So again, to get that, you'll have to subscribe on our Patreon. That's patreon.com/stillpotable. And hopefully you'll do it. If not, it's on you. It's on you. But we have a free trial right now, so go check that out. And thank you for listening.